Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, he's the best-known Democrat in Florida. And this week, Charlie Crist announced he's seeking the office he once held as a Republican, governor of the state.
Crist has had a long political career in Florida politics, served as a Republican and a Democrat. He's been elected to the state legislature, served as education commissioner. He was elected attorney general and governor, all as a Republican. He finished second in a three-candidate U.S. Senate race as an independent. Then, as a Democrat, he fell short in a governor's race against incumbent Rick Scott by less than a percentage point. And now he's serving his third term in the U.S. Congress as a Democrat. Now, we'll go to your calls a little bit later on in this hour about the issues and the early setup for the 2022 governor's race. Line them up now, though. 305-995-1800. 305-995-1800. Hit us up on social media. We're on Twitter at Florida Roundup.
Your calls and tweets in a little bit. But first, a closer look at what motivated Crist to jump in. I spoke with him Thursday. Here's that conversation. Representative Crist, it's good to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Melissa, it's my pleasure always. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about your decision to run for governor. This is your third campaign to sit in the governor's mansion, your second as a Democrat. You've got a seat in Congress. You had a big career in statewide office here in Florida. But what prompted you to throw your hat in the ring for this position?
Well, I think that we need to have a governor that's for all of Florida. And really, our slogan is Florida for all. And what I mean by that is somebody who looks out for every single Floridian, regardless of color, regardless of race, regardless of ethnic background or their gender. You know, I think it's important that we realize we're all children of God. We deserve to have a governor that will not suppress our right to vote, which, sadly, Governor DeSantis signed into law as it relates to mail-in ballots. It's just anti-democracy. And as somebody who believes in democracy, I think we can do better. And I know Florida deserves better.
You used to be a Republican. Now you're a Democrat. Do you believe that the current governor, Ron DeSantis, that his agenda is too extreme, too far right for the state? Would you govern as a centrist?
As a centrist. And I do believe that Governor DeSantis is a radical right. And I just don't think that's in line with what Florida believes. I feel that Floridians want a strong public education system for our state, not a governor that takes money away from the public schools. I think that Florida wants somebody who will fight for our environment on a consistent basis. And I have always done that and always will continue to do so because I understand that Florida's economy is inextricably linked, frankly, to our environment.
You don't think that this governor has done enough for that?
I know he hasn't. Mm-hmm. The only thing he did was change a few board members when they first got elected in the first couple of months, and the environment's been off the radar ever since. It's been off to the hard right. Really looks to me like he's trying to become the next Republican nominee for president of the United States and catering to the Trump folks of Florida, and it's sad to see. It really is.
Let me ask you about a couple of things. Before you get to a general election where you would be asking Donald Trump supporters to vote for you, you first have to face a very competitive Democratic primary. Nikki Freed, the agriculture commissioner, she's the lone statewide elected Democrat. She's expected to run. Central Florida Congresswoman Val Demings, who led the impeachment effort against the president in Washington, one of the impeachment managers, she's expected to run. The Democratic Party has moved left in recent years. You're a former Republican turned centrist Democrat. So what's your strategy to appeal to partisan Democratic primary voters? What's your message to them to be successful first in this primary before you would then move on to a general election against Ron DeSantis?
Well, the same that it's always been. I mean, if you feel like you want a governor who understands that we're all created equal and all need to be treated with mutual respect, then Charlie Crist is your candidate. If you believe that it's important to have somebody in the governor's office who believes that it's important to have automatic restoration of rights for former felons, which I did when I was governor before, then you should vote for Charlie Crist. If you believe that a woman has a right to choose and to make her decisions about her own body, then you ought to vote for Charlie Crist, because that's what I believe. You know, all of these things, I think, are in line with where the Democratic Party is today and where I think Floridians are, frankly, today. You know, most people agree on most things, and they want somebody who will support education, understands that it's the equal opportunity provider in our country, respects the environment, because, as I said before, it's so linked to Florida's economy. People come here because Florida's beautiful, and that's why they go to our hotels and our motels and our restaurants when they come to visit us. I understand how important all of that is. I want to try to keep our taxes low. I want to keep our ambitions high. I want to support our universities and our colleges and make sure that we have teachers who are not just given bonuses, but rather given actual raises in our public schools. These are the kind of fundamentals I've always fought for, and I always will. And I think those are the kind of things that not only Democrats in Florida, but all Floridians.
We are the most vulnerable state in the union to the impacts of sea level rise and climate change. As governor, specifically, what would you do to further protect this coastal state and its residents from what we can expect in the future?
It's probably easiest to judge me by my deeds than just my words. When I served as governor, I held the first climate change summit in Florida history. That kind of focus and that kind of prioritization on climate change is incredibly important to me. And as you say, it's amazingly important to Florida. We are probably the state that is the most susceptible to rising sea level. We are, in fact, a peninsula, and as a result, have so much coastline that we need to protect, property values that we need to protect, and make sure that we're focused on climate change. And I think it's important to equally be focused on renewable energy, as that would relate to climate change as well. And I don't mean just solar, but I also mean wind. We are the Sunshine State, and we're one of the worst at harnessing solar energy. That's inexcusable to me. And I think we need to get about the business of making that a priority as well, because it'll help us address climate change going forward as a state, and we should be a leader in solar and other renewable energy.
The major utilities certainly have a lot of influence in Tallahassee. It's not easy for the average homeowner to convert to solar. What are some specific changes you'd make that would expedite these kinds of changes in Florida?
That's a great question, Melissa. And I think that, you know, some encouragement on the behalf of utilities, some of them seem to be coming along and a bit more enlightened, if you will, as it relates to solar and wind in particular. And that's encouraging to me. That wasn't the case 5-10 years ago in Florida. But it seems like they're coming along, and I'm appreciative of that. But also by working, you know, with members of the Florida legislature and the Florida cabinet and having an opportunity to make sure that the policies we promote, reducing emissions, making sure that we have more renewable energy available to us, that we bring some of the greatest and brightest minds together, just as President Joe Biden is doing right now, and making that a part of what we do to have infrastructure changes, which I advocated to him in a meeting in the Oval Office a week ago Monday, talking specifically about the Everglades. It's also a priority when I was governor before. These are all things that really aren't new. They just need to be renewed, and they need to be brought back, just as we need to have, I believe, a governor who has a compassionate heart and understands that the people are first. We have to look out for their best interest, and that'll create a brighter future for all Floridians, a Florida for all.
Certainly, you're the most well-known Democrat in Florida as a former governor, and you've held other posts over the years. You haven't been governor for a while, though, and there are a lot of younger people moving into the state and transplants who aren't as familiar with your track record in Florida politics. What is your thought about how you will go into a general election against an incumbent who is a sitting governor and is going to spend untold amounts of money, certainly, to win re-election in 2022?
Well, that's what a campaign is for. It's an educational opportunity. It's to remind voters what we did when I served as Commissioner of Education and fought for public school teachers, when I was the Attorney General of Florida and fought for civil rights, when I was governor before, and we did everything we could to make sure that our economy stayed strong, even though we had to go through the Great Recession. You just remind people of where your heart is, where your soul is, and that you're guided by the North Star and stay focused on it. Share that with folks. Look them in the eye. Let them know that you're genuine and sincere about what you're talking about. And that we have a governor now that seems to be callous, cold, and unfortunately divisive. And just one example of that, Melissa, is not accepting Medicaid expansion. That means that 800,000 of our fellow Floridians are not getting health care today and their children. And that's just wrong. And that's cold. And that's callous. Signing the bill like he did to make it harder for people in our beautiful state to vote, that's anti-democracy. I think most Floridians won't agree with that. Just tell them the truth. And that's how you win their hearts and minds. You be honest with them. You be sincere. And you be straightforward. And that's what they deserve. And they're not getting it right now.
We're speaking right now with Representative Charlie Crist. He holds his seat in Congress after winning several elections in that district in the Tampa-St. Pete area. He's the former governor of the state, and he's running for governor again. Let me ask you, Congressman Crist, you've been a Republican, you've been an independent, now you're a Democrat. You've certainly had a political evolution over the years. What would you say to the voters out there who don't think that's been a sincere evolution in your beliefs, that you are a political shapeshifter? What's your response to those folks?
I am who I am. I'm the same guy I've always been. I've always been a fiscal conservative and a social moderate to a progressive. I believe that people need to make their own decisions about their own life. I mean, after all, look what they're doing in Tallahassee now. The governor's going to sign a bill addressing trans and trans people being able to participate in women's sports. I mean, that's unconscionable to me. I can't understand how somebody could do that. You know, there is somebody to judge. It's not us. It's not him. And I think that, you know, if you tell people that, you know, what you believe in is protecting our environment, I've always done it. It didn't matter what party I was in. All that mattered is how I was raised by my mother and father in St. Petersburg, to respect others, to be decent to other people. We may have disagreements, but we don't have to be disagreeable. To get back to some civility in our politics in Florida and America, for that matter. To try to live by the golden rule, which I also learned from my mother and my father. Do unto others as you would have done unto you. In fact, I yet wear these yellow wristbands that say, practice the golden rule every day. If we all would do that, if we all would live by that, a lot of our problems and a lot of the uncivility of our politics today would go away. These things are really not that complicated. Actually, they're rather simple. And it's not so much about right versus left. It's more about right versus wrong. And we all pretty much know what the right things are. Provide a good education to our kids. Protect our environment. Treat each other with mutual respect. And don't waste our fellow man's and women's money. And I have done that my whole career. It didn't matter what party I was. It only mattered what heart I had. And I have the same heart beating in my chest I've had my entire career.
Now, you've said you want to keep taxes low in this low-tax state. At the same time, some of the things that you would pursue as a Democratic governor would cost the state more money. How would you pay for teacher raises, climate change mitigation policies, more generous health care benefits for residents? How would you fund those policy priorities?
Well, I'd be smart. The last one that you mentioned, you know, better health care, more health care for the people of the state of Florida, that comes to us from the federal government. You don't have to raise taxes to do it. You just have to be smart and say yes instead of saying no to Medicaid expansion. That would give us about $3.5 billion more in order to provide that health care to our fellow citizens. As to the rest of the things that you talk about, it's important to do what Florida families have to do every day. You prioritize your spending. You focus on the things that you and I have just talked about on your show. You focus on the things like education, giving our teachers more money, making sure that they're treated with respect as they should be. I mean, my goodness, you know, they're forming the minds of our young people to give them the greatest opportunity to succeed in their life. And then you support our universities and our colleges for the same reason, to give our young people the opportunity to not only survive, but to thrive. That's the kind of thing and the kind of leadership I believe our fellow Floridians want. And that's why I'm running for governor. And that's why I'm looking forward to the race ahead. You know, I've been to several places since I announced in St. Petersburg on Tuesday. You need to go to the people. You need to talk to them. You need to listen to them, more importantly than anything.
One last question. As I mentioned, should you become the nominee, your opponent, mm-hmm. Governor DeSantis, will have a huge campaign war chest. Getting up on TV markets in Florida in the final 2 weeks of a campaign is essential. What's your fundraising strategy?
To raise as much as you can. I know that sounds like a simple answer, but frankly, it's the truth. And you just do the best you can. You get your message out there. You know, whether they are big donors or small, really doesn't matter. You just need to have people who believe in you and trust you and have a desire to have better leadership and leadership that is more compassionate, that really cares about people, that doesn't care about the politics, but understands people are the boss. This is democracy, and the people are at the top. And I look forward to serving them again with a servant's heart as their governor. And thank you for the time, Melissa. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Charlie Crist and former governor. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Take care.
The race for the governor's office in 2022 is on now, with Charlie Crist becoming the first Democrat to declare his candidacy. Your calls on this, 305-995-1800 here on the Florida Roundup, 305-995-1800. Steve Contorno is with us, political editor at the Tampa Bay Times. Steve, we're going to hear from listeners in a moment, but how was Crist's announcement this week greeted by statewide Democrats?
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was, you know, people have been anticipating this for a while. Ever since November, it seemed like Representative Crist was really considering this kind of move. I think looking at how Joe Biden was able to come out of a really bifurcated primary to capture the nomination, how he was able to win over swing voters in important states, and how sort of that familiar name and sort of moderate politics was able to win, gave Charlie Crist the nudge to consider his own campaign for governor in much of the same vein. And in a lot of ways, he's similar to Biden in terms of his temperament in politics. And I think he thinks that'll be a path to victory.
Of course, President Biden did not win Florida in November of 2020, though.
Correct. And, you know, the primary was essentially over by the time Florida voted. So we don't really know how Biden would have fared in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You know, based off the other states that he won, it seems like Florida would have been a friendly state to him. But yeah, that's definitely an unknown. I mean, Biden lost by one of the largest margins we've seen a statewide candidate in Florida lose in quite some time. His folks like to say that they forced Trump to spend money here, and they were focused on other parts of the country.
Yeah, we're going to focus more, Steve, stick with us, on the early goings of the 2022 gubernatorial race here in Florida. Charlie Crist is in. Yeah, if you've lived in the state for a couple of decades, that's a name you recognize in Florida politics. Yes, he was governor of the state of Florida as a Republican. He's been a Democrat now for about a decade. We're going to take your phone calls on former Governor Crist wanting to return to his former job in the governor's mansion. 305-995-1800. Your calls from Miami, Tampa, Clearwater coming up. 305-995-1800. As the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio continues in a moment.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. 305-995-1800 for your phone calls, talking about the 2022 gubernatorial race. Democrat Charlie Crist has thrown the proverbial hat into the ring already. Steve Contorno is still with us, political editor at the Tampa Bay Times. Steve, he certainly has a long political record in the state of Florida as a Republican. What issues will former Governor Crist, do you think, stake out for Democratic voters for the 22 race?
You know, on top of things like the environment and felon rights, which he mentioned in his interview with you, I think it's going to be largely a campaign on temperament and leadership. The vibe I've gotten so far from him is that he wants to juxtapose himself as someone who would be a governor for Republicans, Democrats, Independents, and all of the above, and that in his summation, Governor DeSantis is someone who primarily caters to his own party and especially the President Trump wing of the party. So I think that is one of the major distinctions we're going to see him try to make. Democrats have really struggled to find winning issues in Florida, and they've struggled to find ways to cater to voters outside of their base and winning those sort of moderate types that can help put a campaign over the top. Obviously, they came very, very close in 2018, but we haven't really seen a statewide campaign for a race like governor or Senate in Florida where a candidate has successfully campaigned. You know, he mentioned Medicaid, for example. That was a huge issue in 2014 mm-hmm. in his race against Rick Scott. It was one of the biggest campaign issues he ran on, and he still ended up losing that race. So if that's going to be a retread argument for him in 2022, you have to wonder how successful that's going to be.
Mm. Well, how about it, Florida? Who will get your vote for governor? We listened to an interview just now with Charlie Crist, the former governor, current congressman. He's the first Democrat to officially declare in the campaign. Let us know your thoughts. Who will get your vote in the governor's race next year and why? It's 305-995-1800. Kenneth is calling in from Tampa. Hi, Kenneth. Go ahead.
Hi, Melissa. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Charlie Crist has my vote. He's been doing the will of the people, and he's doing did an excellent job, and he's got my vote. One of my comments is, what happened to all the money from the Florida lottery when the people voted for the Florida lottery for the schools, and there's no money? I know they got the new charter schools and everything else, but there's no money for the school funding.
Mm. You know, that's a question we get a lot from listeners, Kenneth. Let's get to that in a minute. But first, Steve Contorno, Tampa Bay Times. We've got a bunch of people waiting on hold saying that they are going to vote for Charlie Crist. And I want to make mention of a column former GOP strategist Max Stepanovich published this week saying that in his belief, Charlie Crist has a better chance of beating Ron DeSantis than people might imagine, that he might just find a Joe Biden-style lane in this contest and surprise people. What do you think?
I think anyone who wants to make a prediction at this point is probably, it's like we saw four years ago. At this point, we had, you know, Gwen Graham was the front runner. You know, there was Philip Levine who had his moment in the sun, and ultimately it was Andrew Gillum who came out ahead in a very crowded primary. So it's really going to depend on how many candidates jump in, I think, because the way that the vote is going to split based off geographical and racial and progressive versus moderate lines and rural vote versus urban, if it's Charlie Crist versus Val Demings straight up, or Charlie Crist versus Val Demings and Nikki Fried, and maybe there's someone out there who we don't know about yet. Anna Eskimani said, you know, she's more of a progressive and she just bowed out, but there might be someone else out there like that. So I think at this point, we're just going to have to sort of wait and see how many candidates end up jumping in. But I do think that anyone, you know, there's a lot of people who probably rolled their eyes when Charlie Crist, you know, at age 64, already lost 8 years ago, jumping in, kind of saying, what are you doing to yourself? You have a safe congressional seat, relatively safe congressional seat. You're well-liked in your area. Why do this? And I think, you know, as Max said, and as others, people who would doubt Charlie Crist do so at their own risk.
305-995-1800. Your phone calls here with Carl in Clearwater joining the conversation. Go ahead, Carl.
Yes, good morning. Actually, good afternoon, Tom and Melissa. My thoughts are that I'm a non-party affiliated voter. I was previously a Democrat, and I separated myself from that party. I wasn't pleased with the way they were taking direction toward people's needs. Charlie Crist has exhibited the knowledge and the expertise necessary to go forward and bring Florida to a centrist mentality and achieve great things for the environment. And I do believe he's going to take my vote this this go-round.
You're already decided, Carl. One and done, so to speak, as it comes for the 2022 race. Fair enough.
As far as Nikki Fried, she would probably be a very good choice for lieutenant governor, and I think that would secure his place with Florida. And in some regards, Charlie Crist is almost taking a step backwards going back to the governorship, but I also respect the fact that he realizes that the people need him with his ability to interact with members of both parties, with his knowledge of members of both parties, and the skill set necessary to motivate the parties to work together. In many ways, Joe Biden did the exact same thing, and he's still doing it. And I like that a lot.
Carl, I appreciate that from Clearwater. Steve, how about to Carl's kind of point there about a centrist, a bipartisan tone, and you heard that even in Melissa's interview with Representative Crist, that stands in such stark contrast from kind of the political flavor of the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, and that's the central argument he's going to be making, is that he's someone who can bring people together. Although I'll point out that, as Carl said, he is an MPA voter, so he won't get a say in this primary. And that's what's going to ultimately decide is going to be Democratic voters who, are not so much in the middle. And you know, as we saw in 2018, someone who bills himself as more of a progressive type, who is catering to younger voters, who has the ability to energize people, ultimately walked away with the nomination over, you know, Gwen Graham and Charlie Crist have very similar styles. Gwen Graham, like Charlie Crist, was someone who liked working with her Republican colleagues in Congress. In fact, she had a number of Republicans come out and support her. But ultimately, in a primary race that's going to be decided by Democratic voters, people like Carl are going to be waiting to see who their choices are.
It is a closed primary. Here's a tweet about that from Rebecca. She says, I'm tired of the same old white older male faces. I wish Charlie Crist hadn't chosen to enter the race. I think it's time for new blood. This reminds me of the Democratic presidential primary, all of those progressive non-white candidates, and we ended up with Biden. I think he's done a good job in his first 100 days, but I find it depressing that we always seem to end up with old white men, she says. Lots of calls. If you're just tuning in, we began the hour interviewing Charlie Crist. The former governor, current congressman, is running again for governor, this time as a Democrat. 305-995-1800. Victoria in Panama City on the line. Hi, Victoria.
Hi, Victoria. Hi, how are you doing?
I'm great. What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts about the governor's race?
Well, I mean, Charlie Crist has a lot of great name recognition and potentially the ability to pull folks from the middle. I get that. I'm personally very excited if Nikki Fried decides to run. I'm from Panama City. Like you said, we've had a lot of issues dealing with the aftermath of Hurricane Michael. Mm-hmm. It's really refreshing to hear her voice speak up in regards to climate change, in regards to some of the things happening with Florida's economy, like medical marijuana. I think that's an exciting thing to consider. I'm 35 years old, and I voted in every election I could since I was 18. And not always Democrat. But I really, I think she potentially brings that excitement. And she's got a lot of ground support. She's faced a lot of criticism, mostly unrightfully so, but she speaks her mind. And if that can work for one side, it should be able to work for us, too.
Thanks, Victoria. Okay, Steve Conterno, Nikki Fried is the only elected statewide Democrat right now. The state agriculture commissioner, she's expected to officially announce any time. She has a constituency, and so does, as we mentioned earlier, one of Charlie Crist's colleagues in Congress, Val Demings from Orlando, Democratic Congresswoman, former law enforcement officer. She helped lead the House impeachment in Washington against former President Trump. The bottom line, this is going to be a really interesting Democratic primary.
Absolutely. And, you know, Nikki Fried ran one of the most disciplined and kind of genius campaigns of the last election cycle. I mean, who would have thought that someone with her background would end up becoming the Agriculture Commissioner of Florida? That is a job that has largely been held by people who have very close ties to the state's farming communities. And she won it running on, you know, guns and marijuana. And that was a very successful campaign for her. And she ended up being the only statewide Democrat to win. So I think that immediately sort of catapulted her into one of the most interesting names to watch. It'll be interesting to see how she navigates into a governor's race and a gubernatorial campaign where she'll be asked to address a lot more issues than marijuana and firearms. And so I think that will be a real test for her. And then Val Demings, is just coming off a rock star sort of year for the Democratic Party, in which she was not only, like you said, an impeachment manager, but a Joe Biden pick for potential pick for VP. And there's a lot of people in the state of Florida and a lot of people in the Democratic Party who say that, you know, women and particularly Black women have been the bedrock of this party in recent elections. They've been so important. They basically put Joe Biden over the top in a number of states and definitely in his primary. Mm-hmm. And it's time to give those women a larger voice in the party. And Val Demings, as a Black woman who came from Jacksonville and worked her way up to being police chief of Orlando, has a very interesting story that I think she has already started to share, and she has hinted that she is looking to run as well.
We have this tweet from Sierra, who sent us the note at Florida Roundup on Twitter. They're both fine, but I don't think that Fried and Crist are winning candidates for governor. Florida Dems can and will put up better. Wait and see, says Sierra on Twitter. 305-995-1800 or at Florida Roundup as you're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. More of your phone calls here. Let's talk to Dolly in Miami on line 4. Dolly, thanks for calling in. You're on the radio.
Hi. Could you hear me?
Loud and clear. Go ahead.
Very good. Very good. Well, I'm happy to hear that Chris is throwing his hat early. I have my doubts, although I will vote for him, and my prediction is he'll most likely be the nominee. I don't see a nice guy winning this. This is going to be dirty. It's going to be, you know, down the stretch. And not only the census, but the entire Republican Party is going to make sure that this is very hard and very dirty. And I don't see Chris as a nice guy or centrist being able to pull this off. Hmm. Thank you.
Dolly, I appreciate that. Steve, how about Congressman Crist and how he navigated the Trump administration? The former president is likely to play a pretty significant role in the gubernatorial race here in 2022, given his close affiliation with Governor DeSantis, and Governor DeSantis crediting his Republican primary win for governor a few years ago to the president's endorsement. So when President Trump comes calling here for Governor DeSantis, presumably during the 22 race, how will Congressman Crist deal with that? What does history tell us?
Well, his history with Donald Trump is actually very fascinating. They once were friends. And when he was running for governor as a Republican, he had fundraisers in Manhattan so that were hosted by President Trump. So he's, you know, it sort of shows the long winding history of Charlie Crist's career, that he went from being a close friend with the president to being one of his adversaries in Congress. You know, I would say as a congressman, Charlie Crist, you know, was pretty much a party line voter, trying to stop the Trump agenda. He was a member of a caucus that attempted to work with Democrats and Republicans to get stuff done. There's always been a question about how successful that has been in this very partisan Washington. But I expect, you know, Donald Trump, like you said, to be involved. And, you know, not only is he a big supporter of our current governor, but he's now a resident of our state.
Right.
So he will have a vote as well. But yeah. Charlie Crist as a congressman definitely clashed, you know, actually one of the more interesting exchanges and a kind of breakthrough moment for the Senate, for Democrats in Congress came when Charlie Crist questioned Bill Barr during an appropriations hearing and asked him a question that ultimately turned out that Barr may have misled or said something to Congress that wasn't accurate. And it was kind of a breakthrough moment for Democrats during the impeachment investigation. So he does have a little bit of a track record there as well.
Let's take one more call before we go to break. John in Jacksonville. Hi, John. Who will get your vote?
Hey, how you doing?
Great.
DeSantis, for sure. And I think it's due to his leadership through this pandemic. I think that outside of the narrative that you hear a lot of, he's actually done a lot of great things for small business in Florida. He went against I think the leadership lies in the fact that he went against the common sense to lock everything down that everybody was using. And now here we are a year later, and the data is there to show that what he chose to do and to not do was accurate.
Are you a business owner? Real quick, are you a business owner?
I am, absolutely. And you can look at these other states and this flood of other businesses coming into Florida right now. It's because they can't survive in these other states.
Yeah, and certainly there's a strong constituency for that in this state. And so I think the governor's race will be so interesting. Much more to come. Keep listening. You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. In a moment, why the governor's moves to end all COVID restrictions is getting pushback from some mayors around the state. That's next.
Florida Roundup. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, Monday, Governor DeSantis wiped out local pandemic restrictions. He signed an executive order suspending local emergency orders and health restrictions immediately, and also a new law that restricts local orders.
I think folks that are saying that they need to be policing people at this point, if you're saying that, you really are saying you don't believe in the vaccines. You don't believe in the data. You don't believe in the science.
Rick Kreisman is the mayor of the city of St. Petersburg. We spoke with him earlier today. Mayor Kreisman, welcome to the Florida Roundup. What are the rules today, this weekend, in St. Petersburg?
Well, the simple fact is there are no rules. You know, we had had policies in place related to mask mandates indoors. We had policies in place related to social distancing, and that you could not be served at a restaurant or bar unless you were seated at a table. We had policies in place for large scale events, and all of those policies are all gone. So right now it's up to an individual business as to whether they're going to require anything.
Are those rules still necessary in your estimation?
Absolutely. You know, when you look at the percentage of the population that's been vaccinated in Pinellas County, which is, you know, where St. Pete's located, and we're only at about 44.5%. CDC says basically that you're not going to approach herd immunity until you're at 70% when people are still being hospitalized and people are still dying. I think the science and the experts and the healthcare experts all say yes. That it is still necessary.
The governor said, if you need to be policing people still over COVID restrictions, you don't believe in vaccines, you don't believe in the data, you don't believe in the science. You're laughing at that comment.
I am laughing because it's a laughable comment. I mean, you know, he could make that claim if people were rushing out and getting vaccinated and our numbers were approaching 70%. And what we've seen here, and I think other communities are seeing the same thing, is the rate of vaccination is slowing down dramatically. And so, yeah, it's wonderful that vaccines are available, but if people aren't taking advantage of it, then it isn't going to make a difference. And I don't know what science and what evidence he's relying upon, but I trust the CDC. I trust Dr. Fauci. I trust Dr. Sharfstein at Johns Hopkins. Those are the people I trust. I don't trust Scott Atlas, who's a neuroradiologist that the governor has relied upon in the past. Our Surgeon General for our state of Florida may be a very smart guy. He may be a really well-qualified pediatrician, which is what his degree is in, but he's not an epidemiologist. He's not a virologist. He's not an infectious disease specialist.
Are there any rules in place for people who visit St. Petersburg city property or buildings or facilities?
No, because we're not allowed to based on his rules. The way we, my legal staff has interpreted his order, along with and that's in consultation with our county's legal staff, neighboring cities' legal staff. Everybody is of the same opinion that his order, 21-102, preempts us from regulating that. And then if you look at Senate Bill 206, you know, there are provisions in there that also directly relate to government entities and facilities.
That Senate bill is now law because the governor signed that into law on Monday at the same time he signed this executive order.
In that bill in 2006, there are provisions related to vaccination documentation.
Mm-hmm. It bans any business from requiring a vaccination from a customer.
Yeah, and it bans a educational institution from requiring students to provide documentation that they've received the vaccination. Now, if this wasn't political, then why is it still required in order to attend school in Florida that you have to have proof of your diphtheria vaccination, your tetanus vaccination, your hep B vaccination, your measles vaccination, mumps, rubella, polio, chickenpox, but not COVID?
Or the flu.
Yeah.
A flu vaccine is not required either.
Yeah.
There are exceptions to that list that you cited.
Yeah, not many. And you have to ask yourself specifically, and clearly, yes, people die and have died from the flu, but certainly not in close to the numbers that they have from COVID.
Private businesses and federal mask rules do remain in place. So, for instance, if somebody visits the Tampa International Airport, not that far away from St. Pete, they would have to wear a mask. What's your guidance to the local business community? And what are you hearing back from those folks?
Yeah, our guidance to them, and I did a press conference yesterday specifically for the purpose of encouraging my community to continue to do things as we called it the St. Pete way, which is to continue to wear a mask indoors, continue to wear a mask outdoors if you're in a large gathering setting, to continue to socially distance. We've told businesses you have the right, if you choose, to still require masks. The unfortunate thing is this order has really put businesses and the business community in a very difficult place.
How so?
Because it's telling them that you can continue to have mask policies in place, and that makes your employees have to be the mask police. But meanwhile, the public at large hears the governor say no more masks are required anywhere, and it creates a confusion, and people walk into those businesses and say, well, the governor said I don't have to wear a mask. Who are you to tell me? And the business can say, well, yeah, but the governor said we can enforce that. And now you are creating an adversarial relationship that can get real ugly. And that's not fair.
You have said that you expect this new law limiting local emergency orders to be challenged in court. Will your city file that challenge?
We have not, and I don't know that we will. You know, I think it's hard to put the toothpaste back in the tube. And so we could challenge it. We could win. I think we would win. But then you have to, again, you have to go back and start trying to enforce. And it gets real hard to enforce when the guy who's the leader of your state is saying, you don't have to do anything. It's all open. It's everything is good. Everything is open. You don't have anything to worry about anymore.
Mayor Kreisman, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. We heard from a Democratic mayor. Now let's hear from a Republican one. It's Tracy Upchurch, mayor of St. Augustine. Mayor Upchurch, thanks for being with us. What's your reaction to the governor's order?
Well, first of all, I'm not here representing the Republican Party. What I am is the mayor of the nation's oldest city. We're 14,000 people in a county of about 300,000 people, but we have quite literally millions of tourists that come to St. Augustine every year. So that's really the perspective that I think I can offer. I think there's two issues going on here. One is a matter of process, and that's one issue. The second is I can't argue with the governor's order. I understand about herd immunity. I wish we would have it. I wish we would achieve it. I've got real doubts as to whether we will get there as a state or a nation, and so that's disappointing, but I think that's the reality.
Do you agree with his order? You did implement a mask mandate for St. Augustine, even though St. John's County didn't have one.
Absolutely. We were very progressive in St. Augustine. We did have a mask ordinance. People were incredibly cooperative. I think the police had to intervene one time. No tickets were written. We had no issues with it. But I have to ask the question, who are we protecting at this point in time? Everybody that wants the vaccine has ready access to a vaccine. And so that's where I am as an individual, the city. We're not fighting this anymore. We've got other fish to fry. We've done the very best we can. Our citizens have responded beautifully. And
we need to point out St. John's County has the second highest vaccination rate in the state of Florida. How is that informing your take on this?
Well, but the numbers that I saw this morning is, I think we're still less than 50% has gotten both vaccinations. I can't speak for other communities. I can't speak for other counties. Clearly, I'm informed by my position here in Northeast Florida. But again, I ask the question, who are we protecting at this juncture?
Continued mask wearing, you know, that would keep caseload down, certainly.
But who is it that does not have a vaccine at this point in time? It is in large measure people who have chosen not to vaccinate. And I'm delighted to help people and to support people and to send that message when we have people who are not able to get a vaccine. But if my friends and neighbors are choosing not to get a vaccine, I'm not sure why I need to wear a mask to protect them from their decision.
What about the tourism aspect of St. Augustine? The nation's oldest city is a popular spot. Do you notice a difference, say, between
Absolutely.
Locals and tourists and mask wearing, and how is that going?
You know, again, we've had wonderful cooperation from throughout our community, certainly including our visitors. We have had a voluntary mask policy since the governor wiped our off the book.
Yeah. And we'll have
and
to
a high level of cooperation.
High level of cooperation. Thank you so much. We're out of time. He's St. Augustine Mayor Tracy Upchurch. And thanks for listening to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. What an hour it's been, Tom.
Indeed it has. Our program is produced by Heather Schatz and Andrea Perdomo. Jason Zapka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming. WLRN's Director of Radio Operations is Peter Meritz. Engineering help from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, Josh Torres. Theme music, Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. Thanks to all of our guests, our callers, our tweeters. I'm Tom Hudson. Have a great weekend.